Well, good morning and good afternoon, everyone. I'm Elliot Callen, CEO and President of Prosperity Financial Group here in San Ramon, California. And welcome to another episode of Meet the Expert. Today is very exciting. We have a corporate consultant on today, Mary Beth Hyland of Spark Vision, and she'll be telling you more about her firm a little bit later. But they are corporate consultants on corporate culture, something that a lot of us take for granted on the culture of an office, of a company. We work very hard on it here at Prosperity Financial Group, and it's a very imperfect way of building a business because personalities are part of culture and personalities are not straight lines. So we're going to talk about that right now. So Mary Beth, I'd like to welcome you.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a gift to be with you and your community today.
Great to have you here. And so let me ask you a question and some basic questions first, because we've got CFOs and CEOs and HR managers and people that own their own companies on here. And what is corporate culture? Why is it important?
Yeah, there's so many ways of thinking about corporate culture. So I like to consider it in something easy, like the way things are done around here. That is such an easy phrase to remember because a company's culture is really the emotional experience of the workplace. How do you feel before you arrive, how you're feeling when you're there, and how you feel when you leave? It's also the average of the personalities within the organization. So I'm sure you've experienced the expression of one bad apple spoils the whole bunch. You just mentioned that with personalities. Culture is something that can be consistent, but also something that can change quickly with one culture killer that comes into the team. And so it's the kind of thing that I have the privilege and honor of helping organizations to understand, well, what is our culture? Right? Like what, how do we actually define what's going on here? And then how can we be really intentional about aligning our actions, behaviors, practice, and policies with our values, which is essentially how we want our culture to be experienced on a daily basis.
So I'm the CEO of a company here. And as we work hard on corporate culture, to have fun, make it a great place to work, have people understand that the clients are just not number one in name only, but actually number one. And we have to do everything that's in the best interest with our clients, especially as financial fiduciaries. We really have to do that. I've had arguments with other consultants who said you hire to competence or you hire to culture and then competence. As a leader, what's the number one thing that I can do or what a CEO can do to creating the right culture and then having it thrive?
All the practices that I work with leaders and CEOs and HR teams around is getting really clear on what your values are, right? Those core motivators, those core beliefs, and then using those as a tool for the hiring process. So instead of culture fit, which is a pretty big, it's actually a bit of a debated discussion right now because it's the idea of, well, what do you want? Just a whole bunch of people that look and act exactly like you? Or are you looking to have a diverse experience with people who have similar internal motivations, intrinsic drivers, which is where values come in? So a lot of companies and executives are familiar with a vision, a mission, and values, but often they're like a branding exercise versus how you live, how you work, how you go about making decisions. And so a vision is an organization's why, a mission is an organization's what, and values are an organization's how you actually do this work every day. And so we use the formula values times behavior equals culture. And so when you're thinking about, you mentioned the hiring process, what are the behaviors amongst your team members on your side when it comes to hiring people? Are they a reflection of the values? And then on the opposite side, in the interview process, how are you asking people, uncovering what are their intrinsic motivators so you can see if it's a good match within what you all have determined is what makes your culture special, right? What makes your people thrive? Because if you guys are driven by, let's say, wealth is a value, Then if somebody's coming in there and that's not something that drives them, they're not going to be a good fit. I mean, that's a kind of an extreme example given your industry. I would hope no one would be applying to work with you if that didn't matter to them. But at the same time, a lot of folks struggle with what's step one, you know, where do we begin this? And so when I'm working with teams, we're really starting with defining the values if they don't already exist. But doing that in a way that's uncovering what is it that the people here care about, the employees that are already here, versus these are sort of the industry buzzwords in the moment. Let's use those.
Okay. So now that as a CEO, we've defined that we want to have fun. We want to be leaders. We want to give people creativity to use their talent and not just have an authoritarian dictatorship type of organization, but we want everybody to participate and everybody to grow with us. As a leader, how do you influence that? How do you keep that up?
Oh my gosh. Well, let's just take fun. Let's take fun as an example. Tell me what fun means to you in your company. How do you define it?
Well, let's say you want to come to work. You want to see people happy. You want to do some corporate things that are fun also. We're in Northern California and might be taking the team to wine country for the day, or maybe doing some type of team building. But basically, you want to laugh during a day. You want your office to be an extension of your personality. And so I'm a big fan of starting your day by laughing at oneself. But it's nice when people have a good laugh in here.
Yeah. So that would be step one for me, would be defining it, right? So your definition of fun may not be my definition of fun, may not be one of your other team members' definition of fun. So step one would be, okay, so what does fun mean here? What are the words, the sentences that describe what fun is? And then from there, once you have buy-in from the team of collectively saying, okay, we all agree that this is what fun means to us, you can go into a process of understanding, where are we in and out of alignment with that value? So it can be something as simple as sending a survey out to your team members. You can actually do this with your clients too. You can ask your clients the exact same question. Where are we in and out of alignment with fun, or what, insert value here, right? And getting that feedback. It can be as simple as a starting with a 10-point scale, right? We always do this as a 10. We never do this as a zero. And being able to say, okay, how often are people experiencing this here, right? So if they're always experiencing it, then it means you have a lot to celebrate, a lot of things to just feel awesome about, keep the laughter going, really understand, okay, so what are our proven practices around fun and how can we honor them and ensure that they happen on a regular basis versus, oh, that's something we just did one time that was really fun, but we don't have time for that anymore. And then when you do that also with your clients, one of the best things I started doing actually this year was after we facilitate a workshop or a retreat or something that involves a large group or an organization, we send instead of a regular survey that's just like, you know, what did you think? How did we do in these areas? We ask them, what values did you experience today? And how did you experience them? And we ask them to tell us on a scale of 1 to 10, how well did we do when it came to fun, right? How well did we do today when it came to creativity, leadership, whatever the values are, so that it's not just a internal experience, but you're also demonstrating to others that we really care about this. And we care about your opinion of how we behaved in or out of alignment. And it's a wonderful tool. I'll tell you, people are shocked to get that kind of a request. And they're inspired oftentimes. I've had many teams then adopt that in their own practices as a result of experiencing it on our end. But those are two really powerful ways to get a starting point, the baseline of where are we and where can we make some intentional shifts and where can we celebrate?
You know, it's funny. I have a friend of mine that was running a 37-person company, very successful company up the street from you in the East Coast. Oh. And he hired a consultant like yourself, and they did a survey, what you're talking about, with their 37 employees on, and asked them what the mission is, what the values are, and what the culture is of the office. And he figured I'd get back maybe three or four varieties. He got out of the 37 employees, he got 37 different answers.
It's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just, okay, this is our starting point. How much are we willing to invest in unifying everybody?
So let's, of course, as a company that with employees, not every hire is a perfect hire.
Right.
And it's, and I know, and maybe you could address this, during the interview process, trying to find somebody that fits. Competence is pretty easy to find, at least on paper. Culture, way tougher to find because, you know, if you ask them that they have a person, if they have a sense of humor, you're always going to get a yes. I have a sense of humor. But again, what you find funny.
I have a sense of humor. Right.
And none of us as CEOs want to offend anybody because nobody wants to hire a lawyer to help, you know, unwind an ugly situation here.
Yeah. Yeah.
But what do we do when we've created, inadvertently, because no one would do this on purpose, but we've inadvertently created a toxic culture. And we've got one or two or three people that are cancerous to our organization. What do we do at that point? Because some of them are long-term employees and their personal situation now where they did fit in once, they no longer fit. And other ones, they're doing a great job with what they're doing, but from a culture standpoint, they're just destroying your organization.
Yeah. And that was when we started talking about culture too, right? That's the tricky part about culture is that you can have this really robust, dynamic, integrated team, and then you get a culture killer that comes in, and the thing that brings people together is talking about how much pain they're in because of that person, right? And so it creates more and more of that toxic energy. And it's a tricky situation. So culture killers, one of the things that I always want to say is that we've all been one, right? We've all had our days, our months, our years of time when we didn't recognize how our behavior was negatively impacting others. So I say this to say, like, I've been a culture killer. I was somebody who gossiped in organizations in the past because the leadership was gossiping, and that's what made me feel like I was safe and that I was doing what was right. So I'm not talking about this as like, oh, I'm perfect and I've figured it all out, because I want to recognize we all have those days, moments. But the problem, what you're referring to, is when it's extended, right? When this is an ongoing experience of creating toxic energy, creating experiences where people really can't do their best or feel the most productive or engaged or have psychological safety. And in those circumstances, it's really an opportunity to give people a chance to get back in alignment with the values. So one of the ways that that can happen is through having regular ongoing check-ins. So a lot of companies rely on an annual review. And if you're waiting for one time a year to give people feedback, specific feedback on their behaviors and actions, then you're likely waiting way too long. My recommendation is at least on a quarterly basis to have a, whether it's formal or informal, a specific check-in around behaviors and how they are in and out of alignment with the values, right? Considering values times behavior equals culture. So when you have those moments to be able to say, you know, Elliot, I know that fun really matters to you, but I've noticed a change in the last 3 months. You haven't been laughing so much. I've noticed that you've been bringing things up that have been bringing the team down. I don't know if you're going through something or there's something we need to discuss here, but I'm concerned. And I really want us to make sure that we're on the same page moving forward with you being the fun guy that I know you are. And so oftentimes we're just too scared to have that conversation. And then it gets way too far. Like, it almost feels like it's too late. I worked with this CEO recently who had to terminate two values violators in the company, who had been huge rocks. They were big executives within the company. They were a new CEO and came in and learned over and over and over again that these two people were consistently creating damage to the team, but they were high performers as it related to reaching their goals, bringing in revenue, you know, all the things that we want, right? The positive, like, technical skills, but they had none of the human skills. In fact, they were creating a lot of issues in the human department. And so they had, what we did is that we had chances for them to take ownership, to receive coaching, to be a part of a transformation effort that was not just about them as individuals, but about the whole organization and their key piece to that. And when they weren't able to do that, then it was the opportunity for them to find another organization that was a better fit for them. And that, to me, was really important because I think oftentimes CEOs, particularly in the situation you just described with like someone who's been there a long time, is like really reliable in certain ways, but is creating these other issues, can feel really difficult. It can feel like you're trapped and there's sort of a loyalty around, well, you know, what can I really do about this? And so one of the things that I was able to do to help her in recognizing that this wasn't about like going out to get someone was reframing the process that it wasn't about firing those two people. It was about liberating and empowering the entire rest of the staff because those two people were creating shackles for everyone else. And so that reframe really made a big difference for her in recognizing that it's not just about one person. It's about every single person that's here. And what's fair is for everybody to be working within a place that honors and appreciates what they bring to the table. And that wasn't true at that point. It wasn't appreciated and being honored for on either side.
Well, as a CEO, I can appreciate how complicated that situation is.
Yeah, because lawyers were involved, like you said.
It's we've had long-term employees that were once really good with us and then they weren't. And we've had other people. We just recently terminated somebody on the third day of employment because we knew they'd be instantly a bad fit.
That was kind. That is kind.
Yeah.
That is kind to you and your team, and it's kind to them, even though sometimes that can feel like, oh my gosh, are we not giving them a chance? But the truth is, if you know that deeply, you know, you just know in your core, this is not a good fit. You need to take action quickly, which is good that you were able to do that.
Good. Well, in a moment, I've got one more question. I don't want to talk about what a consultant does in this industry.
Okay.
With Sparks Vision Now and how that works, because you're going to be talking to people that are interested in learning more about culture and learning how they can fix it. And of course, as a CEO, we can't fix everything. The HR manager can't, the CFO can't, whoever's in charge, the general manager. But we need the tools and we need the people to help us do our job better. And sometimes we have those tools from experience. Sometimes we have those from education, but sometimes we don't. And we need some help from somebody like you. So I got one more question, and then I want you to give us a little commercial about what a consultant does in this industry, if you would. Okay, Mary Beth?
Okay.
So we're now in a kind of a unique situation just in America that we've been locked up for the last 16 or so months, or some states more. I'm in California. Some states are where we just literally got unlocked this week. But lots of people are still working at home. And this year has taught many companies that at-home work can be effective. And other companies have learned that it's not as effective as what they wanted it to be, where people are leaving at 3 o'clock to go get a massage or go get a manicure, skipping out on meetings because they're tied up and they logged in that they were out for something. And you know, versus being in an office, you're not getting a manicure at 3 o'clock in the afternoon or a massage. You're at your desk or you're at a cubicle. But other companies are, I'm doing work at 9 o'clock at night and I'm more effective than ever. So as this culture, we have a challenge now in our culture because I have a daughter that works remotely. I don't even know how you measure culture in that world. I have lots of friends who are working remotely. Again, they're checking in and checking out, but now other companies are saying, no, come in to work. And they're fighting it. Wait, I'm so much more effective at home and I'm wearing my gym shorts and a golf shirt or button-down shirts with gym shorts, and I'm great. Why do you want me back in there? I don't want to be back in there. I like being alone. So how do we handle this? This is a tough transition time in a marketplace.
Yeah, and I just saw something recently that said 70% of employees will said they will leave their job if there are not hybrid options in the next wave of transition. And so this is not changing. And there is an experience of, well, we just did this effectively, right? Like, obviously, there are some people who are not as effective remotely. I'm not trying to make blanketed statements here. But most organizations who are still here have figured out how to make it work remotely, right? And the ones who haven't may not exist anymore. But it's an experience of really, you know, I recognize when you were saying like, oh, well, you know, they're going to get a manicure at 3 o'clock or whatever it might be. That is one of the things that I think we as a society need to recognize is actually not that big of a deal if you get your work done, right? So it's like, if you, okay, so if you want to go at 3 o'clock to take your lunch break at 3 o'clock, or if you want, if you need to go pick your kid up, or if you need to go to a doctor's appointment, those things would probably be okay when you were in the office. But nowadays it's interesting because there is a lot more scrutiny because there's this debate on, should we all be allowed to still stay home, or are we going to all come back to the office? And so there's interesting conversations happening. Every team is different. I'm having these conversations with several of my clients, and they're like the tech industry, the healthcare industry, universities and construction. Those are the teams I'm working with on their plans on coming back. And they're all so different. Some teams have like completely eliminated their offices. They already got rid of their office space because they saw an opportunity and a savings, and their teams were working fine. And their teams are happy primarily, but there are pieces of them that are sad. And like, well, I'd still like for us to figure out how we're going to see each other once a month or on, around certain projects, right? And so they're figuring out that type of thing. But for the teams that are having a internal tug of war of the staff doesn't want to go back, but the management wants them to go back, that's the most difficult, right? And so we have to consider what is necessary for your people to feel that their voices are heard, to feel like you have honored the fact that everybody has had a difficult year, right? Every single one of us has gone through a lot during this time of the pandemic. And what's been even more challenging is when businesses and executives think it's business as usual, we're just remote, but otherwise everything's the same. So there's been this internal experience for people in their homes of trying to figure out like, who am I? What am I? What do I do? How do I do this? How do I take care of my kids and be an executive and do all these other kinds of things? And there's these moments of executives right now forgetting that there is still great opportunity of productivity and possibility in a hybrid place. And so I would encourage all leaders who are feeling a tug of war internally of our team doesn't want to come back, but the executives want to come back, to spend some time with your team to find out why. Because if we don't ask, we're making up stories. We're making up stories of like, oh, well, they just want to be able to be in their PJs all day long. That may be true. That may not be true. I mean, I started off that way. This is what I would wear to work. You know, whether or not I'm at home, because, and I actually have like pants on and the whole deal, right? So sometimes we make up stories about what's going on instead of asking. And what I found is that when we started to have, so we've done a combination of sending out surveys and then hosting listening sessions, which are essentially focus groups. So if the majority of the team is saying, no, I don't want to come back, we're hosting confidential in the sense of no one's going to be, I'm not going to say Elliot said this and Mary Beth said that, more general statements that people were expressing. People are saying things like, I have a disabled family member that I need to take care of, and that my commute is no longer going to allow that to happen. Right? Or I have a child with special needs who needs me to be available during these hours, which I didn't realize before, but now that's a priority to me. Now, it's not feasible for every company and every executive to help and secure every individual's needs, right? Unless you have a very small team. That's not realistic. But I think it's really helpful in the executive's decision-making process to truly ask and listen before making assumptions on why people want or don't want. Because, you know, a big thing is the commute. People are like, I can't even imagine going back to 2 hours of commuting, right? 1 hour there and back. That's a big statement that a lot of folks are saying these days. And so it's like, okay, so how can the team be really thoughtful around maybe there's going to be some other kind of remote offices that pop up when you need to have things happening in different pockets where other people already live versus needing to maintain the same home base that you always have. But other teams are going to say, we're all coming back and that's what it is. And you can decide if you want to be here or not. And that's okay too. It's just a matter of what matters the most to you as executives and how are you making your choices in alignment with your values, right? Versus against them. Because a lot of times we throw the values out the window when it comes to big decisions, like what are we going to do? How do we come back or not? Instead of grounding in them and harnessing them as a tool and a filter for decision-making. So, you know, it's super, super important that we are giving ourselves and that we're giving our team members permission to be human. And the first step in doing that is asking them what their needs are as humans, listening, and then responding to what you heard. Because there's nothing worse than asking, listening, and doing nothing.
So as a quick commercial, this has been great. We've been talking with Mary Beth Hyland of Spark Vision Now. She's a consultant in the corporate culture world. Mary Beth, in a minute or so, give everybody, if they were to reach out to you, what they can expect you to say, what they can expect you to do, and how do they reach you?
Awesome. Thank you. Yeah. So my company is Spark Vision and our website is sparkvisionnow.com. I'm also super active on LinkedIn if you want to connect with me there. And we work with individuals and organizations to help them define and live in alignment with their values. So for individuals, it's typically at an executive level. We help them in understanding how they can embody those behaviors, how they can heighten their emotional intelligence to create psychological safety. And then for our teams and companies, we do that through all the culture work, right? So how do we create alignment within the behaviors, norms, policies, practices within this entire group of humans versus looking at the one individual? And something I'm super excited about, Elliot, you're the first person that I'm showing on video. My book, which will come out on July 13th, this is like a very exciting thing, is a step-by-step guide for how to do this work. So if people are interested in really getting a playbook on how to know, own, and live your values within your organization, this would be an awesome way to get started. And then if you're interested in more support one-on-one or for the organization overall, I would be happy to have conversations about what that could look like.
And it's Spark, S-P-A-R-K, visionnow.com, right?
Correct. Yes.
Super. We've been talking with Mary Beth Hyland. She is a corporate consultant extraordinaire on corporate culture. It's an important part of our company, and I hope it's an important part of every company. So Mary Beth, thank you very much for being part of this today.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Thank you for your time and energy.
And we hope to see everybody on another episode of Meet the Expert. Have a great day.